You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
In this episode of Meet a Researcher, we talk to Dr. Laura Rival, who is a lecturer in anthropology and development at the University of Oxford. Dr. Rival is participating in the UNRISD conference, Green Economy and Sustainable Development, Bringing Back the Social Dimension, in October 2011, with a paper about ecological threats, new promises of sustainability, and the evolving political economy of land use change and rural development in Latin America. Dr. Rival, your interest in Amerindian communities' concepts of nature and society has led you to study ethnobiology. Could you please tell us a little about this field?
Well, it really starts with the over-specialization of Western science, which has obscured the co-evolutionary relationships that exist between human and ecosystems. So there is much we can learn from indigenous peoples who do perceive the environment and the role of humans in it as a unity. They know how to work with them as a whole, if you want. So we need to look beyond relationship between human groups, because for indigenous peoples, the relations that they have with animals, with plants, and with spiritual forces are social. And so these species do belong to their social world. They do not divide nature and society in the way we do. In a nutshell, ethnobiology is an attempt to reunify bodies of knowledge that got separated in the modern age. And we need to do that in order to create the science we need for 21st century.
How do the concept of green economy and the practices of Amerindian communities relate to each other? What lessons can they offer one another?
Well, the goal of a green economy, as I see it, is to re-embed economic activities within the bonds of nature. To achieve this, we need a new science of economics, a science that would be based on the biophysical properties of the world and the laws of biophysics. So indigenous intellectuals who, through their own personal experience, can combine the teaching of their own traditional cultural wisdom with the scientific knowledge they have acquired through formal education are proposing such models.
And how can the knowledge and the practices of indigenous populations in relation to nature and natural resources impact on government policies then? Can they contribute to policy coherence and have an impact on poverty alleviation?
These indigenous intellectuals lack the detailed knowledge of contemporary societies, how they work, how markets are integrated globally, etc., etc. So there is a need, if you want, to bring scientific knowledge and indigenous knowledge together. And I think that's really one of the most important things to address the question that you're asking here. So the first most important step for me is a recognition from the part of policymakers of the value of the ecological knowledge held by indigenous people. Policy has to be informed by this new science, a science that gives complete value to indigenous wisdom. And that is very difficult and very challenging because indigenous people are severely affected by poverty in the world of today. And the way poverty affects them also erodes that indigenous wisdom that they hold.
What are the main challenges when integrating social and environmental governance? What role could the state play in social environmental governance systems?
Well, the main challenges, really, of integrating social and environmental governance have to do with policy planning and implementation. And what we need for such an integration is what I call a green state. This is going far beyond what was tried in the 1990s, where ministries for the environment were created throughout Latin America. It is really about restructuring the state apparatus so that there is no contradiction at any level between social and environmental policy. So it is a really daunting task. But countries like Ecuador, if you want, around that very specific issue of keeping 20% of their oil reserves on the ground in order to avoid carbon dioxide emissions, is a good example of how people in practice try to address those enormous challenges.
Can policy coherence contribute to changing the perception of natural resources as a source of conflict into a source of welfare and development?
Yes, of course. That's exactly what is going to happen. I think that the idea is that the conservation of nature should not be contradictory to the goals of development. So that means that both our view of what conservation means and what development means has to change. But the interesting thing in the research I've been doing is that conflict is often regarded as something bad, as something negative, that has to be avoided at all cost. But I think that conflict is part of human society. It depends how conflict is resolved. Conflict can play a positive role. If conflict occurs in a democratic, dialogical setting, then conflict will be one of the mechanisms through which new solutions will be found to resolve the problems and the contradiction between conservation and development.
What specific social policies have been successfully applied in the cases you study? How were they integrated to accommodate the interests and perspectives of governments, the private sector and civil society?
Well, you see, the research is not complete yet, so I would not want to anticipate on the conclusions. But what seems to be coming out of the research so far is that success really depends on a good coordination, or rather, should I say, on a convergence between the activities of civil society organizations and various levels of government. And this is what I find very exciting in Latin America at the moment. There are lots of examples of initiatives which are really trying to combine very different levels of subnational governments, of municipalities, and of non-government organizations and civil society organizations, all working together towards the same goal. So, of course, there is conflict, there are differences between them, they argue with each other, but it is in this work of convergence that I can see a promise of policy convergence emerging.
Dr. Laura Rival, lecturer in anthropology and development at the University of Oxford, thank you for taking the time to talking to us. For UNRISD, this is Alice Talk in Geneva.
Check out our other podcasts available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unris.org. If you have any suggestions for future podcasts, email us at press@unris.org. Thank you for listening.